Are you feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, like you're just an Uber driver to your kids' endless appointments? Do you wonder, is this all there is? Stop driving around and try something different. Book in with Body and Mind Online for expert speech therapy, occupational therapy, psychologist and counsellors via telehealth. I founded Body and Mind Online 5 years ago, and it has since been one of the most inclusive therapy centres in the country. This podcast is my passion project. But I've realized that by not openly recommending Body and Mind Online, I'm leaving many of you to navigate the daunting task of finding the right providers on your own. Stop the struggle and get the support that you and your family deserve. Visit adhdmums.com.au and visit the therapy page to take the first step forward towards a balanced life with Body and Mind Online. Welcome to the ADHD Mums Podcast, a safe place for everyday Australian mums to discuss their struggles with ADHD, motherhood, and life. Have you ever wondered if you have ADHD? Let's go right back to the beginning for a second because we have gone deep. And if you've been with me for the beginning, God love you. We've hit number 8 in Australia last week, which has been a phenomenal thing to happen. And I want to take a step back for anyone who's wondering. So I'm just going to give you a bit of an idea about what it used to be like for me having undiagnosed ADHD with kids before being diagnosed and medicated. I had a school-aged child and I had two younger. And what for me really broke me was when my daughter hit prep and we had to have all of the school uniforms. She had to be dressed, have her lunch packed, know what day of the week it was, have things that she should have had, homework, the Seesaw app. Oh my God, the Seesaw app. I had been at a daycare where you had food provided. I used to drop them off in pajamas sometimes, no shoes. And I used to sometimes just leave them in the hallway with someone because I physically wouldn't be able to get in because I had 3 kids under 5 or 3 kids under 3.5 when I first started at that daycare. I really wasn't used to the show, can we put it that way, that sometimes mum have about arriving at a school. So sometimes mums might look nice, take a bit more time with their appearance and have it all together and be really friendly. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that. I think that's actually brilliant. It just made me aware that I wasn't what I had and that wasn't who I was. So before being medicated, I'd usually wake up to a child crying or touching me and I would be struggling to know what day it was, let alone what was on. Generally, the night before had been such a schmozzle with dinner and just getting the kids to bed and relentlessly putting them back to bed that often there wasn't a lot of order. There wasn't the lunch packed. There wasn't even sometimes dinner being cleaned up properly. I wouldn't actually start necessarily with a clean plate. It would be the demolishment or the devastation in the kitchen and the living area from the night before. And I'd be so exhausted, I wouldn't have even put all of that away properly. So from the beginning, I would always be on the back foot. And I would wake up, be on the back foot of fatigue because I didn't have great routines with the kids going to sleep. And I would be generally chasing my tail after school, after dinner. So there wasn't that time of preparation. It wouldn't even occur to me to prepare. I might wake up, know what day it was, but I wouldn't know necessarily when library was for my daughter. I don't even think I had a library bag for at least 6 months of prep. There was a Seesaw app that people talked about and I got the flyer a few times, never set up properly. Eventually I did set it up, but I never knew the password. So in the morning it would be a schmozzle of like, okay, I think that child wants Nutella on toast. Oh, we don't have any Nutella. Okay, well, that's the only thing my son is going to eat. There would also be a whole thing around where's my shoes. It's not even the sensory of putting the shoes on. It's just I don't know where they are. No one knows where their shoes are. Did we go to the park yesterday? Are they still there? I also would realize as well that I'd overcommit. So I'd book a meeting at 8:30, which I never do now. I'm always a 9 o'clock, 9:30 meeting earliest. And I would just put myself under massive amounts of pressure to be able to attend these meetings that I really didn't have much hope of attending. Usually there would be some area where I would realize that it's possibly an excursion or someone might text, or maybe I'd arrive at daycare and realize that my child doesn't have any shoes and it's actually an excursion day, or maybe it's a sock day at primary school. I wouldn't really know. I have told the story a number of times. One time in one of my other episodes that I arrived with my daughter and I was always aware that I did not have what I needed. And so what happened was I arrived and we were 20 minutes late. And when I looked through the window, I realized that her whole class prep were in like fancy dress outfits. And I made an assumption it was Princess Day, felt really bad instantly, ran off down to the shopping center, grabbed her an outfit from the $2 shop, put it on her, took her to school. We were probably maybe 45 minutes late at this point because the shopping center was quite close. And then by the time we got there, everyone was back in their school uniforms. And I was like, what is this? And the teacher said, oh no, it was just a dress up we did for the first 15, 20 minutes of class. But then my daughter was wearing a princess outfit and her uniform was in the car. And at that point, I just left her in the princess outfit all day because I just couldn't do it anymore. Often we wouldn't know where the school bags were. My hubby and I didn't really organize or communicate at all in regards to who was doing what. So there was never really any clear plan. There would often be something that I've forgotten that would come up in the morning. So for example, maybe there's a specific t-shirt that's needed for an extracurricular, but I wouldn't have any washing detergent, but I haven't had washing detergent for 3 days. And that would be my job for the day. Aside from working and everything else, I'd be like, I've just got to get that washing detergent. I generally have a kid that would be relying on me in some way for this piece of outfit that's not been put on the washing machine. And I would then at the end of the day realize I had one job to do and I just haven't done it yet. And that felt like a real failure because I would be achieving all of these other things, but not remembering the one thing that I needed. I would also, when I was going out to the car, get really sidetracked. When I'd be trying to put the kids in the car, I would realize, for example, I don't have the washing detergent, start writing a list. But then I would go inside and realize that all the pens in the house don't work. And then I couldn't find a piece of paper. And then so I would try to find my phone to write it in before I forgot and then realize that maybe I should do a bulk order of washing detergent so this doesn't happen. But then I would open up, let's say, a browser and see that I hadn't put my child's birthday present and I haven't actually fulfilled the order. I've just put it in the cart. And then I would panic and realize I've got a child's birthday in 2 days and I thought I had something in the mail and it's not. Then I'd get sidetracked trying to do that. But then as I would do that, I would then go and notice an ad and then think, oh, my life would be easier if I had better bras. So then I would go check what size of the bra it was, order lots of bras without trying them on. So guarantee they wouldn't have fit anyway. And then at that point, I realized that the kids are fighting. I still haven't really gotten ready for school, but I'm feeling a sense of achievement because I've got these bras now. I would go out to the car and then I would find that I don't have any keys. Then I would go and find the keys and get all the kids to look for the keys. They would all be emotionally dysregulated and fighting, trying to tear them apart, whilst also trying to look for my keys. Then I would go inside and then eventually might realize that it might be Orange Day at Sport tomorrow, try and write that down, still can't find a pen. Then I'll go, oh my God, now my phone is missing. Where did that go? Because now I need to write that down. That would then be missing. Also, I would then go try to find that with an Apple tag, but that hasn't set up properly. So none of that's working. I would then be really angry. The kids would be fighting. I would go back inside, realizes that the lunch boxes have been through the dishwasher, so they won't shut now. Then I go back onto Amazon, try and find lunch boxes that do fit, but then get sidetracked down there, buy something random, then never actually get the lunch boxes. Then at some point go, oh my God, I have to leave. I would start to get the kids in the car. I might realize that I've got my period. I don't have any tampons. I might realize at the end of the day, I still don't have the washing detergents. And it would be a mishmash of chaos. And this is the thing with ADHD. A lot of people say, oh, well, you know, I forgot the car keys. What an ADHD moment. I forgot that sock day. What an ADHD moment. It's actually the amount and the intensity that is what is really, really important with ADHD. It's not that you have to put your phone on your wallet because you'll forget your phone otherwise. And that's just one time. It's because you're never ahead. You're always behind. It's always chaotic. And it doesn't seem to matter how hard you try or what you do. It continues on the same. And then I and many others have a feeling of, I'm not getting it right. I'm stupid. I'm dumb. I can't seem to do the simplest things. I'm letting my children down. I'm letting my husband down. And that would be really difficult because at the same time, I would be having these massive achievements at work and in other areas of my interest. But when it came to the really simple things and the mother that I thought I was going to be, that just didn't meet the reality. And it was a really difficult thing. And in some ways, that really contributed to me being diagnosed as a really positive thing because there was a reason. I'm not just shit at life. I don't have to just try harder. There's actually a neurological condition behind those struggles. And understanding my brain has renewed my confidence in some areas, in that being a mum is a hard job. Whether you're a stay-at-home mum or a busy professional trying to balance a career, a child, children, and everything else, it's doubly hard when you're a mum with ADHD. Doctors have found that families that have two children with ADHD, there's an equal chance if the mother or the father has ADHD. But just because ADHD is often missed in women doesn't mean it's not there. And actually, by overlooking ADHD in women, it only creates more problems. And to make it more difficult and tricky again, many women with ADHD also have depression, anxiety, and or another condition that go along with it. The treating the depression might make them feel a little bit better, but it doesn't actually take away from their ADHD, which may be the true cause of it. Girls are less likely than boys to be diagnosed with ADHD, and we all know that. And we also know that their traits don't go away in adulthood. They're actually less likely to go away in adulthood for women than for men. As a result, a lot of women unknowingly live with a condition that affects nearly every aspect of their life. Boys are still being diagnosed twice as much as girls, but that's not just because boys are more susceptible. Instead, their traits tend to be hyperactive, impulsive, making them more noticeable. Girls, on the other hand, may present more inattentive or hyperactive, but cognitively in their brains, and they don't necessarily disturb their surroundings, which means that they sometimes go overlooked. So, for example, the stereotype, the little boy that's hitting another child or is running away. The girl might be in anxiety, for example, the same level of ADHD, but they're just not asking for help or they don't know what to do. And often these girls go into adulthood untreated. And by then, their ability to cope is very difficult and their ADHD traits get even harder. And it begins to affect various aspects of their life as their life begins to be more complex. And these issues only escalate when women decide to become parents. And this is the kind of the one of the many shit part about being a female, because if you're in a heterosexual relationship and you're a female, you would then marry or partner up with a male. And traditionally, those gender stereotypes are still there. So we are still noticing that women are doing a lot more of the mental load. They are doing a lot of the executive function. And if you have two ADHD people, a male and a female, that meet each other, a lot often that load goes to the female in terms of those little things, those jobs that no one wants to do, groceries, kids, school lunches, keeping track of what costume, who needs to be dropped off, what extracurricular, all the paperwork often falls back to the female. So the question would be asked as to whether the ADHD male actually marries himself a PA. And I don't agree with this whatsoever, but I've just noticed that so often that it happens. I had a pediatrician tell me that often in ADHD families, when the female has ADHD, the wife, the mother, that is where the family is the most affected and the children struggle the most, purely because it's generally up to the mother to organize all of those appointments. And it's completely unfair. I don't agree with it at all, but I'm just pointing out that when people talk about women having traits long term, do men not have those because they are marrying a PA? That's what I would wonder. In a female-to-female relationship or a male-to-male relationship, I have no idea, but I'd love to interview someone that was in that position to see whether those stereotypical relationship roles fall similarly, in that there is one that takes on more of that than the other, or do they truly share it? Is it more acceptable for a male in his 20s to live in a share house in a mess with no toilet paper? And is it not acceptable for a female to live in that same way? Are they expected to be dating and then still maintaining this house? Are they practicing those skills earlier? As adults, women do suffer generally from poor self-image, and they have a hard time with social obligations relationships. We also know that the divorce rate amongst ADHD couples are twice the divorce rate in the general population. We also know that their ability to organize and complete tasks in a timely manner isn't great. There tends to be a real trend in underachieving and being less successful than their peers, even if they are actually more successful in terms of, let's say, sporting ability, academic, and they've studied harder, yet they still seem to have a trend of underachieving. They do tend to be scattered in life. There's a lot of multiple career changes, multiple jobs, which is a lot of the time due to boredom or too many moving parts of a job, jumping into something too quickly, and then realizing that that's actually not what they want to do. There's also a lot of comorbidity with ADHD in females, which includes depression, anxiety, bipolar, learning disorders, and a lot of substance abuse. The stats at the moment that only about 12% of adult women with ADHD actually get treatment for their condition. A lot of the time, untreated ADHD can really affect parenting. Women with untreated ADHD can find themselves really struggling. A lot of mums talk about being a lot more stressed trying to deal with the structure that can come along with mothering. It can be really, can be a real struggle to put reminders into calendars, make calendars, or at times it's just completely overwhelming to even start to get things managed. In terms of just having basic groceries, having food for dinner, they may struggle with just feeling overwhelmed all the time and all over the place. Or they could just feel really down on themselves for not being an adequate mum and forgetting the birthday party, forgetting the birthday gift, never having the right t-shirt on the right day. And a lot of women also tend to be quite reactive. They can be short-fused in their emotions and they have quite a low frustration tolerance. There can be a real lack of patience and outbursts with their children who continue to push their buttons. And women, men, anyone with ADHD tend to have children with ADHD. And that can be a real challenge too, because emotional regulation in a house can be a real challenge. And when you're attempting to show someone what managing an emotion looks like, regulating emotion, and you are not able to do that as well, then what chance do these children have in learning those skills? And by having this continued cycle of emotional dysregulation, you are just increasing the stress in those homes. Added stresses just tend to make things more difficult. For example, ADHD children having issues at school, it's just more to manage on the ADHD mum, where you're juggling appointments, meetings, if you have got access to the NDIS, you're trying to get access to diagnosis, GPs, you're meeting with the teacher over and over again. You've got to remember the inclusion plan. You have to sign the inclusion plan and then you have to follow up relentlessly on some of those things. Then you're battling distractibility and poor time management skills. This can lead to chronic being late, which often can be really anxiety provoking for both the child and the parent, because you're used to always being late, never having the right things, and you're assuming wherever you go that you're going to have it wrong. There's also a real link between alcohol and ADHD and substance abuse. The mummy wine culture, I think, has contributed to this too, where we talk about having a wine. And a lot of the time you have exhausted women, and sometimes they may start drinking during the day to get through and deal with some of the traits of sitting there, let's say depression and anxiety. Having a few drinks or doing drugs can be a way out. Also, eating food is another thing that often women use to get out of the moment or reduce anxiety and depression, for example. They may use food or alcohol to deal with how scattered they feel, to deal with the amount of work that it takes, to get focused, to have a bit of fun. There's also a lot of women that use marijuana as a coping tool, typically to relax, de-stress. The other thing with ADHD as well is that often, even a woman who's diagnosed or medicated, they can make it through the day, maybe with medication. But when that second shift comes on, when you get home, often the medication is worn out. I'd like to say that women and men share the tasks equally if you're in a heterosexual relationship, but I think we all know that's not true. Women are still the primary caregivers. And even after an exhausting day at work, the same day, or maybe even harder day than the male has, mums with ADHD are still expected to make meals, organise activities, motivate others, pay bills, do chores, do the lunchboxes, none of it which is ADHD friendly. And then we wonder why mums are depressed. ADHD is really a family issue. I don't believe that a mum having ADHD is a mum having ADHD issue. I believe it's a family issue. And it's not just a child issue either. If your child has ADHD, it's a family issue. Often a mum with ADHD will go to any length for their child, and they will seek help for their child at whatever cost, whatever logistic. They will do it. They will bend themselves in half. It's not that their child won't receive help. It will just be at the mum's cost. And often the mum goes without medication, diagnosis, any help whatsoever, any self-care to get their child what they need. This is where I believe that it's a family issue, that supporting the mum of the child with ADHD is crucial in the treatment of a child's ADHD. I notice all the time how many resources there are for children, but where's the resource for the mother? Where's the help for the mother? Because they are inundated with all of the things to do, with less coping skills, a neurological condition that makes it quite difficult, but yet we're still expecting them to carry on the same. And the message to the mum still is, try hard, be better. And this is where a lot of women with ADHD sit with imposter syndrome. They don't believe they have it, or they don't have it as bad as others, and they don't believe that they deserve medication. They just need a new calendar and they need to try harder. And one of the main messages and one of the main reasons I do this podcast is because that's not okay. And I'm so sick of seeing women with low self-esteem prioritize their partner, their children, but never themselves. My message to mums out there is that you need to put your oxygen mask on first. This isn't about you. If you have an issue with spending money on a diagnosis and medication for yourself because you don't believe you deserve it, you've got low self-worth, you should just be better. What you actually need to think is, I'm doing this for my children. Your children's outcomes will be better if you are diagnosed and treated. You'll be happier, you'll be more on it, and you'll actually be able to help your children. If you have a family and you have six children and there's eight of you, and you only have one diagnosis amount of money, you've only got one person that you can help, it's you. You're the person that needs to be helped. Because if you can stay on top of it, you can at least start putting the strategies into place that an OT could give you. You could start putting things into place. You could do an online course on ADHD. You could get organized. You could get your visual aids up. You could get the logons to Seesaw. But if you are always behind and you haven't looked after yourself and you're suffering from anxiety and depression, or you're having a few drinks at night, every night, because you need to get through, that's bleeding everywhere into your family. And this is why getting diagnosed and treated and medicated, if that works for you, is so important for women. Unfortunately, a lot of these women who are diagnosed just don't get the support that they need. There are very few support groups that focus on the unique needs of ADHD. A lot of the time, husbands or partners of both sexes may not understand what's happening. They may have unrealistic expectations on the relationship and the responsibilities. In-laws, other family members can criticize, let's say, for example, the way that the house looks, or other obvious signs of ADHD. What we really need to do is to become more aware of what ADHD in females looks like, and to maybe give these people just a little bit of a break. First off, if you do have ADHD, the best thing you can do is to accept that you have it and to stop believing that everyone else has it worse and that you have no right to the label. As women, we're used to being told that we need to tend to other people first, that we need to overlook our own needs and we need to help others. It's hard to admit that you aren't perfect, that you can't do it all, and that you need help. One of the best things I have ever done is to start to accept help. Families work best when they work as a team. If you're in a relationship, I think investing in that relationship and working together as a team is one of the most important things to do. And it's easy to focus on your children and not focus on yourself, or it's even easier to focus on your children and not your relationship. But that's actually where a lot of the energy, I believe, needs to go. If you can delegate and you can problem solve together, if you can choose tasks that you enjoy and trade tasks with other members of the family. For example, my husband and I are very different. We have very different traits as well. So, for example, he will struggle to achieve a task in an open time frame. So I don't give him the open-ended tasks. He does the critical ones that need to be done in certain time periods because that's what he needs to get him moving. For me, when I have really time-sensitive things or short-term jobs that I need to do that are urgent, I get completely stressed out. So for us, I do all of the longer projects because I am not good, but I'm better at chunking it down, prioritizing, breaking it down and having it done. Whereas he's more of a sharp shoot, short term person. The other things that my husband and I did, which I thought was great, was we went through all of the tasks that need to be done. And we looked at what was the tasks that him and I both absolutely hated and that we wouldn't do, couldn't do. And for him, he hates mowing the lawn. He hates it. And he said, I do not want to mow the lawn. I said, well, I don't want to mop the floors. And so we had to try and find a way within the budget, or we had to try and find ways to make more money to be able to bring in some of the services that we both hate doing. And because we're in our own business, it does give you a little bit more flexibility in that I thought to myself, okay, well, what do I need to do? How much more do I need to work to get to a position that we can pay someone to come and mop the floors? And in the end, we worked out that he had to do another 2 hours worth of work a week to avoid doing the lawns. And I had to do similar. But for us, because we're working in things that we enjoyed more than mowing the lawns or mopping the floors at that point, that was something that we thought was pretty good to do. In terms of what to do next, if you are feeling like this resonates to you and you're thinking, it does sound a little bit like me, I wonder what to do next, here's a couple of things I would do. Firstly, I would go onto my website and I would go through a self-test. And it will come up there really clearly as to whether you need to get a diagnosis or not. Two, there's an amazing episode that I'm actually going to re-release. It's season one, episode 35, Do You Have ADHD or Is This Mum Life? This is where I go through the lives of two women, step by step, morning routine, afternoon routine, how they work, everything about their lives, and we look from one to the other as to what they do differently. One is neurotypical and one has ADHD. It is enlightening and actually hilarious too, to be honest. So that episode is going to be in the show notes. Also exciting, I have just released today the ADHD Pre-Diagnosis Workbook, A Guide for Women and Mothers. That book is an absolute beast document. It goes through the DSM, which is the diagnostic criteria that you will go through to get assessed and diagnosed. It goes through that step by step across every single area, every single criteria that a psychiatrist will talk to you about. The brilliant thing about the book is it strips it back. So a lot of women I have noticed will go into a psychiatrist appointment and find that they will just read the questions out from the DSM and they don't know what to answer. They're unprepared or they've thought about it a lot, but then they're embarrassed. They don't know what to say, or they're expecting in some way the psychiatrist to help problem solve, ask them a few questions, maybe give them a hand. A lot of psychiatrists will not do that. They will ask you the questions, you answer back, and that is it. And there's a lot of ways that women get slipped up. For example, childhood symptoms. There's a lot of different areas that can really be a tripping up point. So season one, episode 38, My Diagnosis Journey with Jasmine Meek. That is a brilliant episode. Hers is a three-part series on the steps it took her to be diagnosed. Part two shows what happened to her when she went to this psychiatrist without being properly prepared. And she got so close but was not diagnosed. And it goes into all the details of why, which was one of the reasons that I made this beautiful workbook. So this book has step-by-step instructions. It has practical advice and it has the latest progressive information. It has every single point of the DSM with how a woman or a mum in Australia, typical everyday mum, may mask that symptom, may camouflage, and what it will look like with examples for you. So, for example, there's an element of the DSM which talks about inattention around being late. And I wouldn't have said, even having very significant ADHD, I wouldn't have said I was late a lot all the time to appointments. I wouldn't have classed myself that. But when I looked at with a psychologist the way that I was doing it, so for example, how many alarms I set on my phone, the very intense calendar that I had that I looked at with anxiety extremely often, and the level of anxiety I had around being late, and what I would put myself through to get there on time versus what people would see. So they would often see me arrive on time and would have no idea of the amount of stress and planning and scaffolding that I would have behind that. So if you were just asked straight, are you late to appointments? do you struggle to be placed on time by a psychiatrist, you may not realize that actually what you need to be listing is all of the things that you do to make sure that you do get there on time. So technically, you are there on time and that you don't have an intention on being late. But actually, let's look at what happens cognitively for you to arrive on time. And that there is where masking and camouflaging is really different. And that there is what makes the workbook so good. The workbook also breaks down step by step into sections. So it breaks down into parts, inattentive, hyperactive, and combined. And it also goes into all of the unofficial symptoms, which are challenges with emotional regulation, sleep challenges, sensory sensitivity, making and keeping friends, rejection, hypersensitive, time blindness, hyperfocus. And it goes through in each section a workbook where you get to fill out. So you get to see the symptom, you get to read what the symptom is, you get to see an example of a mum or a wife actually scaffolding, covering that up with an example, and then you get a space to write your own. Then at the end, there's actually like a lift out that you can take to a diagnosis appointment. There is absolutely nothing wrong with going prepared. The reason that we go prepared is because we know that we will be nervous on the spot. It's an expensive, timely effort to take that appointment, and that often people find that part really challenging. So this is why I've made the workbook. So go onto my website, check it out. I'm really excited about it. I'm excited to give you the answer. So many times I go onto websites and I will click on something and I think it will be the answer. And it will actually be an online coaching program after it. So it will be like a two-page lift out that doesn't answer my question, but tells me to then book another course or to then go to another coaching session. I don't do any of that. I just give you the answer in the book. So when you buy the book, know that that is the actual answer. Job done. And that's what I'm really proud of, is that the books have been highly edited by two other people that are both autistic and ADHD, and have been put together in mind what the ADHD brain and written by myself. At the end of the booklet, you'll also have the opportunity to create your ADHD profile and to have a look at where you actually see yourself the most. You may not realize that you're hyperactive. You may think you're very inattentive, but you may find that you actually are very cognitively hyperactive, which may be where some of your anxiety symptoms comes from. It's always great to know your brain better. I really thank you for supporting me with this book and bringing this out. I really hope this audio was beneficial to you. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for another great episode of ADHD Mums. Have a great week, and I will chat to you soon.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.